You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Since the Peace Corps was created by President Kennedy in 1961, over 190,000 volunteers have served in 139 countries. As the program nears its 50th anniversary, former volunteers have been assessing what it has accomplished and what it might look like in the future. And joining me now are three of them: Judith McGuire, a member of the Director's Circle of the NPCA, the National Peace Corps Association; Rajiv Goyal, who is director of the More Peace Corps campaign; and Kevin Quigley, president of the National Peace Corps Association. Welcome to the show. Judith, you were in one of the early groups. First of all, where did you go?
I went to Nigeria from 1965 to 1967.
And what had made you decide to join?
I was inspired by someone I knew who had joined one of the first groups, and I felt that I had been very fortunate in my life and that I wanted to give something back.
Well, your husband was also a volunteer. Did going as a married couple make it easier for you?
I think it probably did make it easier. We felt supported by one another, and we were not alone. We were also in a large city, and there were other volunteers.
But I'd imagine going as a single woman volunteer in some parts of the world might have made life more difficult.
I think.
Have you spoken to other women?
I have spoken with other women. More volunteers are women today. I think it's 60% of the volunteers today are women. But there certainly were some countries where it would have been uncomfortable, I think, to be a single woman.
Rajiv, you went to Nepal 2 weeks after the massacre of the royal family?
That's correct.
Now, when you were preparing to go to Nepal, you had no idea that you were going to be entering the country in a state of complete political turmoil.
Well, we had some idea because we were watching CNN and we were watching that the royal massacre had taken place, and my parents right away called the country desk in D.C. and asked, well, was my son still going? And, of course, I still was. But I was not prepared for all the things that I was going to see.
Well, did it change your sense of mission?
I think it did. I think it gave myself and the 16 other people that I served with a sense of urgency. We did feel like the country needed us, and we had a strong sense of purpose going in.
Kevin, you went to Thailand in 1976 through 79. There was also a time of political turmoil in that country, wasn't it?
It was a time of great turbulence in Thailand. There were three coups during my 3 years there, Leonard, and also a lot of the aftermath of our war in Indochina.
What was JFK's original idea for the Peace Corps? Why did he want to send American volunteers to third world countries, especially third world countries that were going through the coup after coup?
Well, Leonard, he really had two big goals in mind about promoting peace and something linked to that, promoting prosperity. Peace Corps was a creature of the Cold War then. We were in this competition conflict with the Soviet Union, and President Kennedy and his advisors thought that one of the best ways to promote peace and prosperity was to have young Americans serving side by side with people of the developing world and helping them help themselves.
So it was a form of public relations, although I remember I was in England at the time, and any number of people from third world countries told me that this was really just a CIA operation.
Well, they often say that it was just a CIA operation.
In other words, they were suspicious. Instead of necessarily getting great press, sometimes you got negative press because people didn't really believe the United States wanted to help as much as to engage in other kinds of activities.
Well, I think that happened up to a point until they worked with the 190,000 Americans who've been volunteers in 139 countries. You work side by side. You eat the same food. You learn to speak their language and look at the world through their eyes. And then the question of whether or not we work for the CIA or Pentagon becomes completely moot because they understand that we've got much more in common than we have differences.
Let me throw this out to all of you and begin with you, Judith, because you were the one who served first. How closely did the job descriptions you were given reflect the work that you actually did?
I was attached to a social welfare office, and essentially that office didn't function. So the job description didn't fit at all what I ended up doing, and I ended up doing whatever I could find to do for myself.
So is part of the Peace Corps experience adapting to the conditions you find when you get to your site?
That's absolutely true, and I think that that's one of the best things that comes out of being a volunteer. One of the best benefits to the volunteer is to just learn to be adaptable.
Same thing happened to you, Kevin?
Very much so, Leonard. I'd say that I was a teacher, but I taught in a very rural community, very close to the Lao border in a conflict area where there was an insurgency problem. But I think the thing in terms of the job descriptions, if you understand that the job is really about developing skills related to flexibility and empathy and patience, those are life skills that Peace Corps volunteers learn regardless of where they served or when they served.
And Rajiv, well, first of all, why did you want to go to Nepal?
Well, I was sent to Nepal because in the interview I was asked about eating restrictions, and I'm a strict vegetarian. I grew up in a Hindu household on Long Island, and I was asked if offered meat, if I would eat it, if I needed to do that. And I said, no, I'm quite strict. And they said, well, you're off to Nepal where the staple diet is dal bhat tarkari, which is lentils and rice.
And what about your job description as compared to what you actually wound up doing?
Well, I was assigned to be a teacher in a school that had 400 children in a place called Namjay in the eastern hills of Nepal. And I would go into the classroom and half my students weren't showing up because they were walking up and down the hill to fetch water, making this journey as many as four or five times. So for me, making a difference in education ended up meaning working with the villagers to build a pump-operated water pumping system.
Had you been prepared to build a pump-operated system?
Well, I was a English major specializing in 20th century American literature. I was pre-med. Being Indian-American, there was some pressure in college to follow in my dad's footsteps, so I did do that, and I had taken physics. But I didn't really need to be a specialist, and it turned out to be an asset because it was really a local plumber who ended up building the whole thing, and he was a genius. He only had a ninth grade education, but he was able to build it.
But that's part of what the Peace Corps has been about, getting the local people to show off their own genius.
Absolutely. That's what it's about. Our job is to go in there and really empower the local people and support them.
President Kennedy's vision was to have 100,000 volunteers serving at any one time. What's the highest it's been, Kevin? Do you know?
Yeah, the highest was 16,000 in 1966, 5 years after it started. Obviously, far short of the goal of roughly 100,000 a year.
And that's when you were serving, Judith.
That's when I was serving, yes.
So why do you think then? Because of the war in Vietnam? Do you think that was a factor?
I think that the war in Vietnam probably was a factor. And I think when President Kennedy proposed this, it just struck people, and people felt that they wanted to respond and to do something to help other people in third world countries.
You weren't the only couple that went. In fact, a very well-known writer, Norman Rush, went with his wife, and they ran a program in Botswana. And he's gotten something like six or seven novels and short story collections out of it. Were you inspired in that way at all?
To write about my experience? No. In fact, when I came back, I went back to school to do something else.
Leonard, if I can say that there are some 1,100 of us who've written about their experiences. There are very well-known novelists like Norman Rush, but people like Paul Thoreau, who got his start as a Peace Corps writer, and more recently people like Peter Hessler. And if
and Martin Perrier, who is one of America's greatest sculptors, got a major show at the Museum of Modern Art last year. His life was changed by his experience in the Peace Corps.
Yeah, well, that's the one thing Peace Corps can guarantee you. It will change your life.
Well, Rajiv, you were an English major, so does that mean you're going to start writing about this?
How do you write about an experience that's as impactful as the Peace Corps? I mean, I have, you know, picked up a pen and tried to write about this, but it's very hard to put into words.
How many volunteers are currently serving in the Peace Corps, and how many countries? Do you know, Kevin?
Yes, I do. They're just about 8,000, Leonard, in 74 countries.
Now, Judith, have you been following the changes in the Peace Corps over the years?
I have followed the changes. I think that one very significant change is that the training now takes place in country for the most part. I trained at Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo to go to Zaria, Nigeria. And I think being trained in country and learning the language in country has been a very important an impactful change.
Well, has there been a shift in the kinds of projects that volunteers undertake? I'm sure there's a lot more concern about HIV/AIDS education than there was when you were there, because nobody even knew that there was such a thing as HIV/AIDS. Also, hasn't small business development and that sort of thing taken precedence over teaching English?
I don't know that it's necessarily taken precedence, but it certainly has been a change, and though the Peace Corps is very involved in educating about HIV/AIDS and in small business education.
My guests are Judith McGuire, Kevin Quigley, and Rajiv Goyal, a former Peace Corps volunteers, people who are thinking about what the Peace Corps means and their experiences meant and what the future might bring. And I wonder whether you think that the Peace Corps is as relevant today as it might have been in the past, because we now have so many NGOs out there doing many of the things that the Peace Corps pretty much had a monopoly on in the past. Should I begin with you? Let me begin with you, Rajiv, because you're the most recent volunteer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that if you look at the people that are working in those NGOs, if you were to ask them to raise their hands, most of them would probably be Peace Corps volunteers. And I think that given the some of the declining perceptions about Americans around the world, I think the Peace Corps is more relevant today than ever before. I think we need it.
You're nodding your head, Judith.
I agree, we need it. I think we need Peace Corps volunteers out there improving the image of America, which right now I think is seen as mostly through the Iraq experience.
Well, what happens when people are hostile because of things like Iraq? Are there countries that had programs in the past that no longer do, Kevin?
Yeah, there are a lot of countries where Peace Corps had been in the past, like important countries. India and Brazil immediately come to mind. Nigeria is another one where Peace Corps had programs in the past and doesn't currently for a variety of political reasons. There are also some countries where we've had programs more recently in parts of the Muslim world where we don't currently have programs. A place like Pakistan, for example, for security reasons, there's not a program. But there, you know, I think in part there's an opportunity for us here to, with two presidential candidates thinking about how to improve our standing in the world, that they recognize that the Peace Corps program, because of the kind of people-to-people contact that Rajiv and Judith have described, that there's the potential to use that much more effectively as a tool to enhance our standing and show the world that we're interested in being partners in addressing a lot of the global problems.
Is it at all ironic, Judith, that you were in Nigeria when the Biafran War began, and now Nigeria, which was pretty dangerous at the time, and now Nigeria is one of the countries that we're no longer serving the Peace Corps?
The Peace Corps left Nigeria, in fact, because of the Biafran War. And all of the events that led up to it, it's interesting hearing Rajiv and Kevin talk about the coups that happened when they were there.
I guess it goes with the job.
It goes with the job. We were there 3 months when a coup occurred that eventually led up to the Biafran War.
We'll take a little break and come back with more from Judith McGuire, a member of the Director's Circle at the National Peace Corps Association, Kevin Quigley, who's president of the NPCA, and Rajiv Goyal, who's director of the More Peace Corps campaign. We're talking about the Peace Corps, which will celebrate its 50th anniversary in the year 2011. And my guests are Rajiv Goyal, Judith McGuire, and Kevin Quigley. And Rajiv, you, as you said earlier, you're from Long Island, but your parents were from India, which used to have a Peace Corps program. Why was that one ended?
Well, in I think it was...
There were no coups, as far as I know.
Well, there was a state of emergency in India under Indira Gandhi, and I think there were perceptions of misactivity by the Americans who were in country, and largely because of political reasons. The Peace Corps was never there, though I think that there's lots of rooms to reopen that program. You could put thousands of Peace Corps volunteers, I feel, in India without them ever running into each other and doing very good work.
Does Peace Corps take into account a volunteer's ethnic background when it's making assignments, or is it just their dietary needs?
I wonder if they do. I mean, in Nepal, we had three or four folks like me, Indian Americans, and we all did pretty well. I mean, Hindi and Nepalese are very similar, so we had a leg up in language. And we did have some understanding of the region that was very useful, so we integrated quicker. And my language class was actually, it was just me with the director of the training program every morning because I was on a faster sort of treadmill. And I think that it's not a bad thing. I think it was a very good placement in my case.
In your case, Judith, you went to Nigeria, which is an Anglophone country, although there are many local languages, Zaire, which is Francophone. So isn't it? Isn't Zaire French, the lingua franca?
Yes.
If you're not speaking one of the local languages. I'm sure you didn't have to learn English. I'm not sure you had to learn Yoruba or one of the other
Hausa.
Local.
I learned Hausa.
So you were in the north.
I was in the north.
And Hausa, in the Muslim north.
If there is a lingua franca in West Africa, Hausa is it. It goes across sub-Saharan Africa, and you often find Hausa speakers even in northern Ghana.
Do you still speak Hausa, or have you lost it all?
I've lost most of it. I still speak a little bit, and now and again I encounter a cab driver, and I'm able to use my greetings with them.
And Kevin, you speak Thai?
I do speak Thai, and I lived in a part of Thailand where they speak Lao as well. So, and I'm still able to speak Thai and Lao.
Mm-hmm. And I'd imagine that you have to go to certain restaurants in, I don't know, where do you live, Kevin?
I live in Washington, D.C. Yeah, we're fortunate, like in New York, we have lots of great Thai restaurants here.
Now, the whole thing is changing in an odd way, isn't it? New countries have been added recently, Eastern European countries. Do those countries take it as a slight that they're seen as needing the Peace Corps? I mean, a country like Poland or the Czech Republic or Hungary, wouldn't they think that they are a little too advanced?
Yeah, that's a great point. And those Peace Corps had programs in Central Europe after the fall of the Berlin Wall. I think their first program went into Poland in 1990, but that program winded up there in the mid-90s. And they saw that really as part of an effort of reintegrating into Western Europe. Peace Corps still has some programs in Southeastern Europe, in Romania and Bulgaria, and programs in Central Asia. And one of the challenges associated with Peace Corps is exactly what you're suggesting, that there is the perception that sometimes Peace Corps is essentially a development program, and that many countries like China, where there's a Peace Corps program, feel that they're not a developing country. They have 5,000 years of civilization. So Peace Corps developed a model more along the lines of a friendship program and has done something similar in Mexico. And we think this is a great model for being much more innovative in how Peace Corps develops its programs with other countries.
Although we are also sending Peace Corps volunteers to some of the former Soviet republics, like Azerbaijan, Turkmenistan, etc.
Sure.
Do they have to request the volunteers?
They do. The way Peace Corps operates is the governments of the receiving country have to formally request a Peace Corps program. And then it's negotiated with our government in terms of what are the parameters for the program.
Well, as the political winds change and the different people occupy the White House, I'd imagine that some countries that might be considered okay for one administration would be considered less okay for the next. Have any requested volunteers but been turned down?
Well, as far as we know, there are some 20 countries or so that are requesting Peace Corps volunteers, for which our country says we don't have the resources. And part of our effort through the More Peace Corps campaign is to generate significantly more resources so that those 20 countries who are asking to have a program have the opportunity to work with Americans in addressing some common problems.
I guess I was thinking about if Iran requested some Peace Corps volunteers,
yeah,
or Syria.
Well, as you probably know, there had been a Peace Corps program in Iran in the 60s and through the early 70s. And I think if your point is, would some administrations be more open to Peace Corps programs in some countries, I think the answer is yes.
Does a country get to decide what kind of volunteers they want, teachers, nurses, engineers, et cetera?
Yeah, there is a negotiation between the countries who express what their interests are, often shaped around their development agenda, and what Peace Corps thinks it's able to provide. And in many cases, they fall around those issues of education and health and small business and that we've been talking about in your show.
My guests are Kevin Quigley, who's president of the National Peace Corps Association, Judith McGuire, who's a member of the director circle of the NPCA and one of the first Peace Corps volunteers. She went to Africa in 1965. Also, Rajiv Goyal, a fairly recent volunteer. He was in Nepal between 2001 and 2003. He's director of the More Peace Corps campaign. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. I wonder whether, and I throw this out to all of you, I'm sure you can't know the answer completely, but just from talking to other people, have volunteers reasons for joining change? Are more people applying now because they feel it'll help their careers rather than out of a sense of altruism? Judith, what do you think?
Well, I think that volunteers who are joining today do know that it can help their careers. They've seen that volunteers have come home and their volunteer experience has been effective in helping them pursue their careers.
Rajiv, is this seen as an alternative to serving in the military?
No.
I mean, we don't have a draft, but...
Yeah. No, I don't think so. I think I actually feel that the reasons for joining the Peace Corps across the first 47 years, if you were to do a kind of a sociological study, you'd probably find a similar reason. I think it's, as Judith said earlier, it's a feeling of having a lot of privilege and wanting to explore and to help and be altruistic.
What do you think, Kevin?
I would say that I think the motivation through the generations has always been mixed. There are many who are motivated by altruism, others by career. Certainly in the 60s, many saw Peace Corps as a form of alternative service to military service until their draft board disagreed. Some were looking for adventure. You know, it's a big program involving lots of people, and they often have many, many different motivations. But I think there's a growing awareness that the kinds of skills and experience related to language acquisition, empathy, flexibility, life skills that people get are very helpful from a career point of view as well. There's a growing sense of that.
Does the Peace Corps turn many people down?
There's essentially three applicants for every position in Peace Corps, which is less than it was in the 60s when Judith was a volunteer. But I think in large part that's because many people know about Peace Corps, but many Americans just don't believe it's still out there. They're not aware that Peace Corps is still serving this country and serving other countries.
Is that the Peace Corps' problem, the Peace Corps not getting the message out?
I think that's part of the challenge that Peace Corps has, is that when we think particularly in terms of our U.S. Congress, that many, many of our legislators, they all are advocates for Peace Corps, and either they have somebody on their staff or a family member. We have six returned Peace Corps volunteers serving in Congress at the moment. But Peace Corps has had very few champions who really push aggressively for Peace Corps. And I think there is a question about just Peace Corps' profile in the American public today. It's nowhere where it was when Judith was a volunteer.
But you'd think that with all those people in Congress and also the diplomats who've come through the Peace Corps program, people who work for international companies and NGOs, that there might be some more positive press.
Yeah, that's one of Rajiv's challenges with his campaign, to help organize and mobilize that constituency that is there to be a much more advocate for, more effective advocate for Peace Corps.
Rajiv, when you talk to potential volunteers, now women, for example, do they express concerns about things like being forced to wear burqas if they serve in certain countries?
Well, I
and
think
other cultural sources of conflict?
I've spoken mostly through the campaign with returned Peace Corps volunteers, because that's really the grassroots base that we're trying to rally. The you mentioned earlier there were 190,000 former Peace Corps volunteers. But some of the younger students that I've spoken to, yeah, they have lots of questions about what exactly happens in the Peace Corps. And my response is usually that no day is the same as the next.
In an op-ed piece in the New York Times in January, Robert L. Strauss, who's a former volunteer and country director, wrote that he felt sending recent college graduates was no longer an effective strategy for Peace Corps, and that it should recruit experienced older people. Is that something that the Peace Corps is starting to do?
Peace Corps is and has for some time been making an effort to recruit the 50-plussers. It's created some challenges for the organization in terms of when you're 50-plus, there are whole sets of life issues that all of us have to manage.
Even if you're retired, living in a village with no electricity, phone service, or running water might be a problem?
Well, typically what Peace Corps tries to do, Leonard, with the 50-plus volunteers is put them in situations where they can best take advantage of their life skills, and they're probably not going to be living in a mud hut in a village or in a thatched roof out in the jungle. They're much more likely to be in a urban setting than a younger volunteer. But this is a challenge for the Peace Corps, in that the process of recruiting and getting through the application process is more complicated for people who are 50-plus because of medical-related issues and others.
Judith, is it true that the first volunteers were driven to their sites and told, good luck, see you in 2 years?
Well, that wasn't my experience, but I was not one of the very, very early volunteers. But those that I've talked with who were there in Nigeria before me felt that they were well-supported. I can't speak for other countries, but in Nigeria, I think there was quite good support, especially by the time I was there.
Did people assume, some any, that you were CIA or part of some other more devious program?
No, people were quite accepting of me and my position. There was also a British volunteer with whom I worked, and we were just accepted for who we were. We weren't expected to do anything different than anybody else we were working with.
Kevin, are there statistics that you can point to? Schools built, literacy reduced, infant mortality rates declined?
There are some statistics, and there's a lot of anecdotal evidence as well. But I think this is one area where Peace Corps, like many other non-governmental organizations involved in trying to promote prosperity around the world, just has to get much better than it has been in the past.
Rajiv, do you think that the Peace Corps has been successful in increasing understanding between Americans and the people of the host countries, the original goal?
Absolutely. I mean, when I went to this little village in Namje, people looked at me and they said in Nepali, Rajiv bhaneko pani ke re American hunu saksa, which means somebody named Rajiv can also be American. And I think that right there, that shows. I mean, when you live with people for 2 years, in Nepal at least, there was no real privacy. I mean, really lived with people. It builds that understanding.
And your More Peace Corps campaign is, its goal is to double the number of volunteers, the budget, and the number of countries and programs?
Yeah, the More Peace Corps campaign was launched by the National Peace Corps Association in January 2008 to build a bigger, better, bolder Peace Corps, one that's doubled in budget and number of volunteers.
Who do you have to convince? Is this mostly something that Congress is going to have to be part of by appropriating more money?
Well, it's interesting because in our conversations with the decision makers, I mean, nobody will say that this is a bad idea. People instantly agree. Their faces light up. I think who we really need to organize and excite is this base of returned Peace Corps volunteers.
Well, some of them are going back in short term for emergencies, aren't they, because they know the areas.
Right. This is the Peace Corps Response Program. And actually, one of the platforms of More Peace Corps is to really radically bolster what was formerly called Crisis Corps.
Just one more thing. We kind of mentioned earlier the presidential campaign. Both of the candidates talk about service. Do you have a sense that the fate of the Peace Corps will be different in a McCain or Obama administration, Kevin?
Yes, in two ways. I think that either President McCain or President Obama will make Peace Corps a much higher priority and will request for significantly more resources. And then the Peace Corps, an expanded Peace Corps program under the next president, will be part of a larger context, and that is an effort to promote national service, because I think both Senators McCain and Obama understand that when you volunteer, it's good for the volunteer, it's good for the communities they work with, and in Peace Corps' case, for the communities they come home to.
How many of the 190,000 volunteers who've served over the years are members of the National Peace Corps Association?
We've got 30,000 supporters who are, and another probably 90,000 who are connected to the National Peace Corps Association.
I want to thank you all so much for being with us today. Kevin Quigley, president of the National Peace Corps Association, Judith McGuire, member of the director's circle of that organization, and Rajiv Goyal, director of the More Peace Corps campaign.
Thank you very much.
Stefan Fatsis is a 5'8", 170-pound, 40-something-year-old sports writer. In 2006, he went on assignment to become a place kicker for the Denver Broncos for 3 months. Up next, he'll tell us how he did it and what it was like to play pro football with the big guys. This is WNYC and WNYC.org.